Podcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect. Hope everybody had a great weekend. I shared a word on Facebook this morning. It's from Romans 1:20. It says, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse." Today on ABQ Connect, we have Brian Nixon. As you know, Brian is a frequent contributor to this program. He's an assistant pastor and director of publishing and education for Calvary Church. Brian has what I call full flavor. He is a full-flavored New Mexican. He enjoys literature, art, music, and the beauty of God's creation. He has a brand new book out. It's called Tilt, Finding Christ in Culture, and it is now available. Welcome to ABQ Connect.
Well, Jim, as usual, it's great to be with you, and I like that description, full-flavored. I'm going to use that.
Well, and that's what you have to have when you're a New Mexican,
right? That's right.
And I know you're not native. I act. I'm from New Mexico, yeah. Been here my whole life, and I've gotten to know all of the different cultures. I guess I shouldn't have learned all about their food, but that's where I went first. And Brian, you have so much knowledge about all this cool stuff, and we're going to really have a fun discussion about your new book. What about people, places, and things and ideas? What about those things make you tilt your head in curiosity?
Yeah. For our listeners, what you're referring to, Jim, is I designate Tilt, Finding Christ in Culture into four parts: people, places, things, and ideas. And I think generally, I just have an intellectual appetite. I wonder at so many things. And it could be from the arts to the sciences to you name it. I'm just a curious type guy. And so when I started to write these articles, which all of the chapters in this book, if you will, started as articles, as narrative journalism. And maybe we could unpack that a little later. Mm. But they started as articles of me just exploring different places, different people, things, and ideas. And I wrote about them. And so what had happened is when I connected with Cascade Books, who published the book, they said, "Hey, let's compile some of your articles in a book. You have a really clear thought of how you wanted to organize it, and the articles seemed to be strong enough, and voila, the book came out."
Well, I know, Brian, you have all kinds of motives, but your primary motive, at least in my view, and knowing you the little bit that I do, is you want people to have fun. You want them to enjoy life. You
That's
want
right.
them to observe everything. And I made a comment to you a minute ago, and I hope our listeners will be open-minded about this. You make that appeal to them as well in your book. You look at life without a secular lens or a Christian lens interfering with the view. You are a Christian. You believe in Jesus, but you are observing everything just as much as you can to see what it is and how it is.
Yeah, and I like that description, Jim, and I think that is accurate. I mean, I come at, be it art, music, poetry, whatever, from a fairly neutral. Obviously, I'm interpreting it within a Christian lens in the end. But I approach it from the standpoint of what I say in the introduction, common grace. This idea that God has bestowed upon us, he's given to us so many wonderful gifts. And those gifts are there for us to enjoy and to be thankful for, not to abuse them or idolize them, but just to be thankful for them. And again, that's when my intellectual appetite comes in. It's like, wow, this is interesting. I'm going to pursue this topic or this person and see where it leads me. And as you know, as you've been reading in the book, I tie in Christian themes that I find. Now, I do need to point out, Jim, that not every person I talk about in this book is a Christian per se. They don't hold to biblical doctrines. But what I do as an observer, as that person you said, who's just enjoying the moment, is I'm finding Christian elements either within their work or their life or something else where I could say, hey, even though they may not profess to be a Christian, there is still Christian themes to be found in their work or in their life, or you fill in the blank.
Well, I've teased you in past programs about your wife And what happens to the Nixon family when Brian wants to go to Santa Fe? And you've laughed. My poor wife.
You know? My poor wife. That's my poor kids. My three kids have had to deal with literally their whole life being dragged to, you know, where other kids were going to Disneyland and all these things. For me, it was, no, we're going to art galleries and we're going to national parks. And, you know, but what about Mickey Mouse? Well, Mickey Mouse will come one day. We're going to see art and explore nature, you know.
But I want to give an example. I mean, there's a lot of Native American art in Santa Fe and it's spectacularly beautiful. Now, there are artisans who have a Native American philosophy, one being like Father Sky, Mother Earth, and that's not necessarily a Christian perspective, but you're able to see the beauty of God's creation and see Christ in that world.
That's exactly right, because for me, I'm kind of approaching all of this as both a theologian, if you will, and a philosopher, and I think when I approach it, anything, when they say Father Sky, they may not know that they're the one true God, but as the biblical record declares, there is the one true God. So I'm able to, I guess, kind of look through the facade or the verbiage and get to the heart of what is being said or maybe, not clearly articulated, but I could try to draw out, some of that deeper meaning that's found there. And it all comes down to, and I don't want to scare our listeners off, but it comes down to being, which in philosophy we call ontology, and teleology. So God is the, if you will, the originator. He is the great artist. He's the great musician. He's the great architect. He's the one that started it all. So everything has its being ultimately in God.
I'm going to skip down my list a little bit, only because for some reason I feel like I've got to ask you this question.
Ask
first.
Away.
Would you rather, and I'll reword it a little bit, would you rather be standing on the side of the Grand Canyon very peacefully, tranquilly, looking out over that magnificent, you know, landscape? Or would you rather be, you know, in a beautiful cathedral looking at paintings and different things in Italy? I don't know if I know the answer to that.
I don't either, because I would say it's neither either or, it's both. I would want to do both. As a matter of fact, for my wife and I, we were scheduled to go to New York last week to visit my sister. And we had on our list all these museums that we were going to go to. And I was really excited for it. Well, something called COVID-19 happened and we had to change our plans. So what did we do? We went to southern Utah and went to all the national parks, Zion, Bryce, Glen Canyon. And that was just as spectacular and momentous of an impact on me. Because again, I look at something and I look back to its ontology, its being, and both creation and the creative process, be it the arts, have their root in God.
Brian, what are you looking at when you look at a piece of art? What do you see that most people don't see?
Well, I don't know if I see anything that most people don't see, but my initial response to art is a reflection of its form, of its color, of its impact. And this is even with art I may not particularly like. And then I try to find its deeper meaning. Like, what is this communicating? If it's an objective, meaning a realistic painting, you know, are they telling a story? What's the symbols in it? But my initial reaction is the color, the form, the symmetry, the balance that's there. So even before I start trying to read into it, I'm just stricken by the immediate response of, wow, that's blue, or that's green, or that's yellow, and this is what it does, and I like how it's shaped, and so on and so forth. So I have more of a, I guess, a primitive initial reaction, and then I start to analyze it maybe more on a deeper level. If it's objective art and it's telling a story, well, what story is it telling? And then I seek for meaning later after I just have that initial experience with it.
Brian, I think I'm personally capable of stick figures.
That's okay.
But painting, my friend. So do you understand the process that someone goes through when they're creating maybe a piece of abstract art versus a beautiful landscape or a portrait? all different kinds
of
painting, but do you understand that process?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much so. Because I do both objective, which is what we'd call realistic art, and non-objective, which we'd call abstract art. I do both. I mean, personally, I do abstract art and non-objective art, and I know the process it goes through. And quite frankly, sometimes, not sometimes, most of the time, that is much more difficult than realistic art for me. Or objective art. Objective art, when I sit down and paint, I kind of just have an idea of where I'm going to go with it. And because I work in watercolors, I lay down, you know, pencil drawing, and then I outline it in ink. And then I add the colors. And there is a sense of play that I'm doing. There is a sense of improvisation. But with abstract art, non-objective art, it's much more difficult because I'm harder on myself when it comes to abstract art because you just don't want to look like, oh yeah, he just threw that together in 2 seconds. Anyone could do that. My kindergartner could do that. And that's not the case with, you know, non-objective art. I mean, really, it takes a lot of time to get it to where, you know, you as an artist, are appreciative of it.
Well, we have a lot more to talk about today. Brian's brand new book is called Tilt, Finding Christ in Culture. It's a fun book. It's a great read. And I'm going to encourage everybody to try to get a copy of it. In fact, Parchments on the campus of Calvary Albuquerque will have the book soon.
Yes.
COVID kind of delayed them being able to stock up. They've only been open, I think, a week.
Week, right.
So they are going to be giving people a 50% discount on the book. It's also available through Amazon. And in fact, I downloaded it, onto,
Kindle.
Kindle. What I was trying to say. I usually use iBooks.
Yeah.
But Amazon uses Kindle and I couldn't find it on iBooks. So I downloaded it this morning.
I know we're going to a break, but just to say a funny story of how COVID has thrown everything off. I actually had to buy my own book. because the publisher, you know, the person that deals with getting the author copies to them, COVID had set it off. So I actually had to purchase my books, to get a copy.
Oh, that's funny. We'll be back with Brian Nixon. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The most recent State of the Bible survey revealed that only 9% of millennials read the Bible on a daily basis. The most skeptical generation on record is also uninformed about the Word of God. Small wonder there's such lifestyle confusion. What about your own children or your grandchildren? How can you pass on your faith to a younger generation so they don't become a statistic and a skeptic? We want to help you encourage a young person in your life to get excited about God's Word and all He has for them. Soaring Through the Bible by Skip Heitzig gives kids and tweens an overview of the entire Bible in an exciting travel guide format that includes fun illustrations and fascinating facts to keep them engaged. We'll send you your copy of this made-for-kids resource when you give a generous donation of $35 or more to help keep these Bible-based teachings on the air, connecting more people like you to God's Word. Call now to give, and then receive your copy of Soaring Through the Bible, 800-922-1888, or give online securely at connectwithskip.com/offer.
Stay-at-home orders, layoffs, and financial hardship has many families experiencing food insecurity for the first time. By uniting, we can mobilize more resources than we could individually. For years, churches like Citizen, Sagebrush, and Calvary have helped anchor the Albuquerque community of faith. And on Saturday, June 20th from 9 to 5 at Cliffs Amusement Park, they're coming together with Convoy of Hope for the Community Drive-Thru Family Relief. This event provides 2,000 families with a week of non-perishable food, dairy products, and fresh produce. It's a drive-thru event and families will stay in their cars. Volunteers will load food for the families. Traffic will line up westbound on Osuna and continue towards the northbound frontage road. An area is reserved for walk-ins to receive food as well. Convoy of Hope, Community Drive-Thru Family Relief, Saturday, June 20th from 9 to 5 at Cliffs Amusement Park parking lot. Details at calvarynm.church/events.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Dr. Brian Nixon, Calvary Albuquerque Assistant Pastor and Director of Publishing and Education, is now also an author in addition to being dad and writer and editor and all these other titles that you have,
Brian. That's right.
Have written a new book called Tilt, Finding Christ in Culture. And here's I'm going to frame this question kind of with two parts. Brian, why would some Christians be close-minded about the book? And then on the other hand, do you think people that don't necessarily believe in God might consider that he is real by reading your book?
Yeah, these are two great questions, Jim, as I told you at the break. First one, about Christians that would be closed-minded. I think there would be some Christians that would be closed-minded about the book. For one, the book is broad. I mean, it covers a lot of people, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, that aren't Christian, and I'm seeing Christian themes in their work. And some people may think I'm too laxed, maybe, in some areas. Again, there's a lot of Christians that like things just very black and white, very, very dogmatic. Hey, I only listen to, you know, Michael W. Smith and one other Christian artist, and that's it. Anything else is beyond the purview of my listening. And that's not the angle I take. You know, I do highlight, different people who necessarily aren't Christian. Let me give you an example. Sam Shepard. Sam Shepard, as we know, is a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright, famous actor, nominated for Academy Award. And I met Sam Shepard in Santa Fe. And after I wrote the initial...
Sam Shepard is Chuck Yeager, by the way.
That's right. Sam Shepard is Chuck Yeager in Do the Right Stuff. So after I wrote the article that is based on, you know, the book picked up this article, I received a letter from a listener or a reader who said, boy, I didn't like that you highlighted Sam Shepard because, and then they went down all this list. You know, he's been married several times. He blah, blah, blah. And he just had this litany of things that were bad about Sam Shepard, let's say. And I said, I hear what you're saying. I responded back to him as I always do with all my emails. I respond back. Thank you for your email and I appreciate what you're saying. But however, my gist is not to highlight the bad things that he's done, but rather to highlight that which I have found a Christian theme in his work. And we went back and forth with a couple of emails and so on and so forth. So I think there are those type of Christians who would see that, hey, you've written about Sam Shepard or you wrote about Robert Redford. And I did write about Robert Redford in this book because I covered a story with Robert Redford and people go, well, he's not a Christian. And they would say the same thing about the author Cormac McCarthy or Andy Warhol. And the list goes on and on of different people that I talk about this. I even talk about Shia LaBeouf, who, as we know, is a famous Hollywood actor, and he's had some run-in with the law and some bad things, you know, happened to him the last few years. But again, I'm not proclaiming that they're Christian. What I'm trying to do is find Christian themes in what they've said or have done. So I think, again, there would be some Christians that would be upset with my approach or angle. However, on the other side, to answer your other question, that people who may not believe in God or be hesitant about, you know, what's this whole Christian thing about? They may be more receptive to the book because I do approach Christianity from what I would call a cultural apologetic standpoint. I approach Christianity not so much as condemning people, you know, out the gate as I am accommodating and trying to find out what they are trying to say. I listen before I lecture, so to say. And I think that's appealing to a lot of people. Cultural apologetics is nothing new, Jim. C.S. Lewis did it. You know, C.S. Lewis wrote the Chronicles of Narnia, and he included Christian themes, and it's beloved by people around the world, Christian and non-Christian, because those who are Christian see the Christian symbolism and what he was trying to say, and those who are not Christian just appreciate the story. And so cultural apologetics has been done for years. And I think this book in a certain way, even though it's not an apologetics book, it kind of takes that frame of cultural apologetics. I do have one section where I do come from a very apologetic standpoint. And that's when I talk about Daniel Dennett, who's one of the four apocalypse horsemen of new atheism. And I went to hear him speak in Santa Fe and I brought along Dr. Stephen Collins, Grant Brissett, who is an apologist and a clergyman. And I said, okay, guys, you listen to this and then I'm going to interview you afterwards. And so it, you know, there is a little bit of apologetics in this book, but generally speaking, the book is what is classified what is known as theopoetics. And theopoetics is a sub theme in both, the cultural aesthetics as well as theology. It's kind of if you took culture and art, the arts, and mixed it with theology, that's what you would have in the theopoetics realm. And that's where I'm classified as a writer. So when people say, well, what genre does Brian fall under? I would put myself under theopoetics.
I hope that no one puts together the bad list about me, because, boy, that would not be fun.
Right. Me neither.
You know, and that's why I'm so grateful that our sin has been forgiven, mm-hmm. and that's the whole reason Jesus died. And so I want to go back to the people that you talk about in your book, and the people that are not necessarily Christians. These are human beings. These are
that's
people
exactly
that God
right.
made. He's given
and he
them talents,
them.
And he loves them. Absolutely. What I like, Brian, is that you listen to everybody, people that believe, people that don't believe. You listen to what they have to say. You just said you went to Santa Fe to listen to what an atheist had to say.
Right.
That's tremendous. And everything you have to say about everybody in your book is really positive. It's really beautiful. It's about what they've created and how it was a spiritual journey for them and what you learned from them
yeah.
by watching it. By listening and appreciating their art. So I think it's an amazing book.
Yeah. I do stand by that. Jim is, and you haven't got there at the end of the book. I actually use an acronym for TILT, and T stands for take time and, you know, to go out there and see what's in your community. I is investigate, learn about, you know, what it is you're viewing. And then L is listen. Listen before you start lecturing. And it's not till the T that you tell or, you know, teach other people, things. But let me give you an example. I've used Sam Shepard. So I met Sam Shepard at the Santa Fe Institute. And that is a science institute that's in Santa Fe. It's world renowned scientists, you know, come and go through there. And Sam Shepard was a scholar in residence, what they call a Milner scholar there. And because the Santa Fe Institute likes to incorporate the arts within the sciences. And I just happened to be on a tour, and he happened to be there. We had a few words, and that was that. But what fascinates me, not only because I've been an admirer of Sam Shepard's, particularly his later works, is that he actually got his start in Christian theater.
Hmm.
And I bring that out in the book. People, uh-huh. see, people who don't realize the full story of someone, they would go, huh? Yeah. So Sam Shepard was his first acting career, if you will, was within the Bishop's Theater. It was a Christian theater group that traveled the country and did Christian plays. They even did a C.S. Lewis play. So they went to churches, performed, different Christian plays, moral plays, and he traveled the country. And then when he got to New York, he just stayed in New York. And then, of course, interestingly enough, what does he do? He connects with another church to do off-Broadway plays. And again, I'm not saying Sam Shepard's Christian. I don't know if he is. I mean, that's between him and the Lord. But what I'm saying is there are these themes in people's lives that have interesting connections to the Christian faith.
Well, you've been on the program to talk about a myriad of topics. I mean, we talk about your work at the homeless shelter. We talk mm-hmm. about your theological perspective and apologetics. We talk about evolution versus creationism. One of the things that I know you're interested in are things in nature
mm-hmm.
that speak to a creator. Like, for example, I can't help but think about a logarithmic spiral, like a nautilus shell.
Mm-hmm.
There's a mathematician called Fibonacci
yep.
who comes up with the Fibonacci sequence,
yep.
which kind of shows that there's a amazing mathematical thing going on in the creation of those spirals.
Yeah.
And it speaks of a creator.
Yeah.
It happening by accident, or the transition of one species to another, all the things that our culture talks about. I have this perspective, Brian, that people are not using their brains,
mm-hmm.
that their bias is somehow clouding their vision. So that's what I appreciate about you, is you're looking at things objectively, but you're not omitting God.
Yeah.
And that's what science seems to have done.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's true. But one of the things that, even with Fibonacci, there, you know, God was part of science for most of the scientific endeavors. You know, Newton, even though he wasn't an Orthodox believer, but the list goes on and on and on of people who were scientists and believers in God. It wasn't until, you know, let's say in a strong way, post-Darwin, that people really started to omit God from the equation. But you brought it down to its common denominator, Jim, and I appreciate that. It comes down to ontology and teleology. Again, I'm using these words. The fact that there's something rather than nothing, that's ontology. And teleology is that unique order, design, and purpose that we find in nature. And those two things, I think, are some of the biggest apologetics that we could use for not only people within culture, but within people within the sciences. And I do actually, in this book, Tilt, hit upon the sciences. One of my last chapters is I talk about mathematics. And I talk about, I have a friend, a German friend. He's a German scientist, much more brilliant than I am when it comes to mathematics and physics. He's actually a computer engineer and scientist. And he's created some elaborate formula. And I equate it, I use some of his work, and we banter back and forth to talk about Kurt Gödel's equation he gave. And so there is some science in this book as well. It's not just all art.
Well, I love it. Brian, I want to ask you when we come back about how much fun you have observing all of this. Our listeners need to know that you're a punk rocker by heart. So when we come back, more from Brian Nixon. We'll be right back.
How does KNKT mean business? KNKT is in the business of sharing the gospel. KNKT is also supported by local businesses who we, in turn, encourage you to support with your patronage. Here's Steve Ryman visiting one such business.
We recently had a chance to catch up with Buck Buckner, the owner of Rain Tunnel Car Spa. Here's what he had to say about doing business locally.
Hey, Budgay. Car Spa and other local businesses are joining forces to launch a campaign called Local First. It's a call to action to spend our hard-earned money with locally owned businesses. Why local? For every dollar spent at local businesses, the economic impact on our local economy is 3 to 4 times that of the same dollar spent at a non-local entity. With them, profits beyond minor repairs are exported. Local businesses reinvest in the community again and again. Local businesses are completely dependent on community support and thus have a much deeper tie to the neighborhood. Local businesses are as competitive as non-locals. They hire local, promote local, and operate with far less employee turnover. National tenants are not a critical piece of our local economy and arrive only years after local business success. Where are those nationals? Sports Authority, Marcello's, Borders, Raley's, Copeland's, Zia's. Poof. Gone. Legislators, along with American Express, suggest we take one day to buy local. Nice thought. Don't they know our local businesses operate 365 days per year? So think, act, and do local first. Shop local, dine local, wash local, bank local, construct local, search engine local. Follow local media. And finally, to increase the coffers for an even greater Albuquerque, keep it local.
To hear your business featured on KNKT, email advertise@knkt.com.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Brian Nixon, he is in charge of publishing, and he's an assistant pastor at Calvary Albuquerque. He's reading a lot of books, puts out everything that Pastor Skip puts out there to the world, and that takes a lot of work, but now he's put out his own book. It's called Tilt, Finding Christ in Culture. Will be available at Parchments on Calvary Albuquerque's campus. Probably give it another 3 or 4 days. It's going to be a 50% discount. Love to have a signing party, but COVID's kind of preventing a lot of that.
Yeah,
right?
It hopefully down the road we'll have a little signing party, discussion party, whatever they want to do. I think some of the things that you're addressing today, Jim, they may want me to address in kind of a formal format, because some people would read it and go, Andy Warhol, George O'Keefe, I thought you were going to just maybe be talking about pastors or something, And again, that's not the angle of this particular book.
Well, and New Mexicans have to appreciate Georgia O'Keeffe. Just the way she handled colors and,
right,
you know, the beautiful flowers and things that she put together. I mean, what an amazing appreciation she,
right,
had for nature. You're mentioning, well, let me just go to where we went in the break. I mentioned to you that there are people that live in their house, their car, and their office.
Right.
But they don't know their neighbors. They've never taken a trip up to the Hamas. They've never been fishing. That's a lost life.
That's, yeah. Yeah. And I even added, Jim, that they live in their heads sometimes. And I quoted to you, Thomas Aquinas, who's one of my heroes, Christian heroes from the Middle Ages. He said, beware of a person of one book. And he's not critiquing people who believe in the Bible, of course, but what he's saying is that person who all they know is just themselves, basically, what's in their head. And as Christians, we generally have two books, right? We have the book of the Bible, and then we have the book of nature. And both of these books are open for inquiry, meaning we use the Bible to learn about culture and things, and then we study the book of nature to learn about God. Both books are testimony of who God is. And it goes back to what we talked about in the beginning, common grace. You know, there, common grace is grace given to all. It's God just saying, here, the same mountains, the same air, the same scenery that I'm giving not just to believers but to unbelievers. It's common to all. Well, then there's specific grace, and that's grace for those who believe and receive, that those who receive Christ. Well, we could liken that also to what we would call general revelation. That's revelation that God gives through the sciences, and he gives through culture, and he just allows us to enjoy the good life. And then there's specific revelation, what God gives specifically through his word. So there's two graces, there's two forms of revelation, and what's beautiful for Christians is we have access to all of these. These are part of the gifts that God has given us. So part of what I do is I go out and try to discover where God may be speaking, whether people see it or not, or I try to find the fingerprints of Christ, is what I say in the book, in different places, in unusual places. And again, it could be something as interesting as Robert Redford or George O'Keefe or Daniel Dennett, one of the atheists. But I go out there and I try to learn and listen, and then I'll, you know, teach or lecture later.
Well, I want to talk to you about music now, because I know music is really, really special to you.
Right.
And I think most of our listeners, and I'm stereotyping, hey, I'm totally blowing it here. My prejudice is obvious, but you don't sound like a punk rocker to me, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my musical heritage is very deep. You know, both my mother and my father was an opera singer. My mother was a singer, or is a singer. And I grew up literally in a household of music. Music was literally there since my birth. But when I started to make music my own, not just listening to what my uncle was listening to or my brother who was older than me, I started to get into post-punk. And so post-punk is that which came after, let's say, 1978. So these post-punk musicians and bands really influenced me. And so in 1986, I formed my own band. We were called Morning Becomes Electra. And then later on, we dropped the Morning Becomes. And by the way, Morning Becomes Electra, for those who know your literature, it's named after a Eugene O'Neill play. So Eugene O'Neill was American playwright. He won the Pulitzer, I think, three times. He also won the only American playwright to win the Nobel Prize in literature. So we named it after Eugene O'Neill. One more little tidbit of fact here. Eugene O'Neill, because at that time I was living in the Bay Area. Eugene O'Neill, his final home was in the Bay Area as well. So he lived in Danville. So we picked Eugene O'Neill as kind of our go-to guy. So Morning Becomes Electra was the name of our band. Later on, we dropped the Morning Becomes because it was just too long, and it became known as the Electra. And we were signed to a post-punk label. And then after that, my music career just kind of diversified. I was in a folk rock band and in a Christian rock band. But to answer your question, yes, music has played a very important role. Interestingly enough, on my Facebook page during this COVID, when I had downtime in the evenings, it's like, how many Netflix shows can you watch? Let me do something more productive. I actually did lyric videos for some of the bands I was in. So on my Facebook page, I don't even know what my Facebook page, you know, address is. I actually didn't have a Facebook page. It was the publisher who said, oh, you're going to have a Facebook page because this is just how we do it in the modern world is social media. I had no social media, but I created all these different, lyric videos for some of the bands, and Morning Becomes Electra was one of the bands. And you look at it and you're going to go, who are all these guys with makeup and crazy hair? Now, I didn't have makeup and I didn't have crazy hair. I was the only guy in that picture that you see there, but that band is also represented there.
How important is music to you? And I ask that everything's kind of in twos here, because there are people that are not believers and there's people that are believers and they're listening to the show. And I think they both find music really important, and there's some common ground there.
Yeah. I mean, music for me is incredibly important. As I've already mentioned, I was, you know, since the cradle, music has been a big part of my life. And then as, you know, in bands, as a composer, you know, as a matter of fact, I have a piece of music in the New Mexico Music Awards right now called Bolero de Berke. And, Stefan Merkel, who's my friend, he's a German from Germany, works at Sennheiser here in town. He arranged it, and it was nominated for two New Mexico Music Awards, both for Best Arrangement and Best Composition. So music still plays a vital role in my life. But I think, Jim, even more philosophical or theological, you know, music is a testament to God's grandeur. You know, music points back to a composer. And so when we hear music, we go, wow, who wrote that? Who created that? And I think, you know, music, using cultural apologetics again, can be a way that people would go, hey, there's something more. Just like there's a composer to this score, there's got to be a composer to life and the bigger music, if you will, of existence. So I think music is a cultural apologetics means to point people to a creator.
I want to ask you about types of music and other things, but I think before we do that, we better take another break, say thank you to our sponsors. We do really appreciate our sponsors here on KNKT. They help us bring forth the ministry. And I want to remind everybody that we've just started our first ABQ Connect Facebook page. You can go to facebook.com/ABQ Connect. I suspect Brian's is going to be Facebook.com/Brian Nixon, but I'm not
probably positive. Yeah, I'm not sure either,
but you can Google that and find that as well. We'll be right back with more from Brian. Stay with us.
Duke City Ready Mix, your local premier concrete and gravel producer, recently received national recognition by winning the Excellence in Concrete Quality Award from the National Ready Mix Association. We are dedicated to earning your trust by our consistent quality, service, and by being a good neighbor, serving the entire valley. Visit us at QualityMattersHere.com or call 877-5777. Duke City Ready Mix. Quality, service, community.
Gonstead Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury, pain in your back, neck, shoulders, arms, and legs, as well as numbness in your extremities. Dizziness and bladder or bowel issues can all be symptoms. 90% of doctors treating spinal ligament injuries don't know how to determine the severity and location of this condition. At Gonstead Physical Medicine, all of the providers are trained to do this. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
Tired of being tired? This is Roger Patterson with a minute of vision for life. What you do with frustration determines your future. I've no doubt you've heard someone say, I got tired of being tired. It's what four-time World Series champion Daryl Strawberry told me about his life before he really got his addictions under control. Now God is taking his mess and making it his ministry. When you're tired of being tired, you're at a great point for change. You see, frustration is a great catalyst for change. Do you struggle with frustrations that get you back in the exact same place? Whether you struggle is with weight, alcohol, pornography, when you're tired of being tired, look up, seek out help, and get moving in the right direction once again. You see, God is not done developing you. It says in Philippians 1:6, "And I'm sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ." If you stay the course, God will take your mess and turn it into your ministry.
You've been listening to Roger Patterson, author of A Minute of Vision for Men, a daily devotional available at visionforlife.org.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
The author of Tilt, Finding Christ in Culture, Brian Nixon, in studio with me this afternoon. We're properly socially distancing.
We are.
Still being cognizant of all of that important stuff. And Brian, I know a lot of people have different opinions about this, but, you know, I've got to tell you, I think that COVID is a real pandemic.
Sure.
People are dying. We need to be careful. We need to be diligent, but we don't need to shut down and we don't need to live in fear.
Right.
But we need to be careful.
Yeah. Take the precautionary steps to keep others safe. I think it is a step of consideration for others when you take those proper considerations.
Absolutely. And we're talking about music. And Brian, your new book is all about finding Christ in culture. So you look at all kinds of things that are not necessarily Christian. You look at painting. You look at music. You look at writing. You look at film. Yeah, I mean, you just look at the gamut.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And in this book, you know, when it comes to music, I do highlight two New Mexico composers, which I'm really proud about. To my knowledge, these are the first two times these gentlemen have been in print. One fellow's named Frederick Fromm. He's a fabulous composer. And then the other gentleman is Dr. Warner Hutchison, who was the music chair down at New Mexico State University. And I was privileged to be able to drive Warner to different as a matter of fact, there's a festival in his honor, the Warner Hutchison Music Festival in southern New Mexico. But both of them are tremendous composers. So I highlight what we would call art music. I also highlight jazz. You know, there's a whole section on jazz in there, and I talk about some of my favorite jazz composers, be it Thelonious Monk or John Coltrane or Eric Dolphy or Dave Brubeck, all of those guys. And then I even hit on popular music. You know, I touch on Chris Isaak in the opening chapter because my band that we talked about last break was performing at the same time Chris Isaak was. He wasn't yet Chris Isaak as we came to know him. He was just an up-and-coming guy, so our careers were kind of parallel to one another. But I also mentioned Bob Dylan, Nick Cave. You know, the list goes on and on because all of this music, you know, influenced me, but it's part of our broader culture as well.
Well, I think my own personal experience is not as broad as yours, but had a friend that this past year, she took me to see a little bit of the Philharmonic.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the Olga Kern piano competition.
Yes.
And, you know, started off with Rachmaninoff and a number of other
Very
composers
nice.
That, you know, I had never heard. But it was really spectacular. It was really fun to listen to. And I wonder how many people have really been to the Philharmonic. I mean, I know that they struggle because there's kind of a tight-knit group of people that
right.
attend those things. I know this. They would love to expand the purview of our citizenry. People need to go see that.
We do. I mean, just as human beings, we should experience, you know, great cultural pieces of music. And then I think specifically as Christians, we should experience them because we could use them as means to glorify God, to thank God for the person who created it and the beautiful music or the thought-provoking or challenging music that was created. I think we really should. You know, the Philharmonic, I have a friend who's associated with, his name's Michael Bowen. He too is a composer here in town. And for a while, he also had a little Christian orchestra that they highlighted Christian pieces. And on one of the occasions, they had me speak before to give a little bit of lecture on a piece. But I think Christians should have and be engaged with those things. And you would be surprised at how many composers and how many musicians and how many artists, though they may not be Christian per se, are really seeking something transcendent. They're seeking God and sometimes they don't even know it. They're looking for more than what you could touch, taste, feel, and see. They're looking for a supernatural, if you will, experience, something that's metaphysical beyond the physical realm. And it's great if a door is open that you could say, hey, I too was looking for something and I found it in the person of Christ. So I think, you know, there's opportunities in those situations as well.
When you listen to music, and I don't care what type of piece, are you able to sense that that person may have had great joy or maybe great sadness and depression in creating that music?
Yeah, I think sometimes you can. I mean, you know, let's take someone like Bruckner, who's classically a lot of people, they call him brooding. You know, it's brooding music. And he fought with some mental illness, and there was a depression that was inset there. So you find that. And then, you know, you find someone like Charles Ives, who really was one of America's first avant-garde composers. But there was a lot of playfulness in his music, as well as a deep experimentation. But I think composers, because they're human beings, they will impose maybe their feelings that are going on in their life, or maybe they're trying to express something through the music, and it could be joy. You know, you think of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, where we've pulled the hymn Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee is actually the melody that Beethoven wrote. Someone just wrote Christian lyrics to it. But he was trying to exude joy, you know, through that Ninth Symphony. So, yes, I think composers will imbued with their music a sense of what they're feeling.
And I want to ask you, do artists need us to like their work, or are they fulfilled just in creating it?
Great question. And that was one of the questions that when I saw that you wrote it down, Jim, I go, boy, that's a fabulous question, because I think there's a little bit of both. Community is needed in the arts. Someone to appreciate it is needed. But I think there's also a sense true artists really do it because that's what they do. That's who they do. I paint every week. Every week, Jim, I paint. And I do it not necessarily because I'm going to show at a gallery or I'm going to get people to do it. It's just because what I do. But when I'm asked to show somewhere, and I've shown several times here in town at the Norbertine Abbey, every year, a couple times a year, they have an exhibit, and they are faithfully ask me every time, and I'm appreciative that they ask for it, because that's when the community aspect comes out of it. There's a thinker, a German thinker by the name of Hans Georg Gadamer, and Gadamer said that art is likened to three things. It's likened to play. That you know, there's a sense of play. There should be enjoyment. There's a sense of symbol, that art symbolizes something. And then thirdly, he calls what is a festival. And festival is really just a community coming together to enjoy what was created. So I do think art requires a festival, you know, maybe not in a formal sense, but that community of people that have come together and look at it and study it and appreciate it. But I don't think artists necessarily do that to appease, the community. Mm. They do it, I think, in some sectors to appease themselves, to, you know, because that's who they are. But in my case, I do it because I enjoy it. But I also do it as it's a time of just thoughtful and prayerfulness. It slows me down where I could just think about certain things, and it's almost a prayer when I'm painting.
So if you're showing a painting, what is a question that you would want someone to ask you that's observing your painting and looking at your painting?
Well, it all depends. When I've showed at the Norbertine Abbey here in town, people, when it's my avant-garde art, like, they're going, what in the world are you doing? I don't get it. And explain that to me. And so I try to explain what I do with the avant-garde art. So what I do is it's abstract. It's non-objective. But the day I finish it, I name it after a Christian from the past. Hmm. And so there's a symbolic gesturing, if you will, to what's being done. So I look up someone who may have been born or died on that day, and I name it after them. When I do the objective or the realistic art, people usually, their first inclination is, well, what are you trying to say? What's the story behind that? So I'll talk to people, maybe not interpret it for them, but I'll say, well, here's what was in my mind when I was creating it.
Let's talk about places a little bit. What's the favorite place you have for you and your family? But then I want a second question. Again, I've kind of done that the whole show. Do you have a favorite place that you like to visit by yourself?
Hmm. Boy, for my family, you know, here in New Mexico, there's lots of places that we have always traveled to. But Santa Fe, I would say, would be one of our favorite places here in New Mexico because it's such a great confluence of the arts and beautiful scenery, and there's so much, you know, culturally to do there. But I think, you know, as far as national parks in New Mexico, places such as White Sands, Chaco Canyon, Carlsbad Caverns, these are beautiful places that we like to go to. But just on a personal daily basis, I love the bosque. I love the river. I love just being, you know, having that close by the water. So there's lots of places we as a family have always taken advantage of. Now, on a personal level, I think for me on a daily basis, I love to watch, I love to walk Petroglyphs National Monument. Mm. So I literally live at the base of Petroglyphs National Monument. So it's kind of a daily reminder of not only something beautiful, you know, nature-wise, you know, these lava rocks, but culturally, you know, Native American inscriptions and so on and so forth. So it's this beautiful inscription or this beautiful combination of nature and the arts there. But then again, the bosque as well. I love that. So I think personally, the bosque and the Petroglyphs National Monument.
Well, I can tell you, we have so many places in New Mexico. That's why I love the four seasons.
Oh, me too.
I love the temperature change. So you can be up on the crest. That's why the tramway is so beautiful. You can be up at the top of that mountain in March and there's snow. There's 3 feet of snow. Ride the tram down and it's 65 degrees down in the city. I mean, where else can you do that anywhere? And I love Taos. I love all the ski areas.
Yep.
A gentleman that I went to high school with, Ben Abruzzo, he has been operating the tram and he's been operating Santa Fe Ski Basin in San Diego. And I'm jealous because he does such a good job of keeping those beautiful.
Yeah.
And they're spectacular.
Yeah. And I wish I was a skier, Jim, because my wife's family, her cousins, own a good portion of the ski resorts here in New Mexico and Southern Colorado. They own Purgatory, Sipapu, they own Snow Bowl and Flagstaff. They own a lot of these ski places, and we get invited. I'm not a skier, but we get invited and just are able to take in the beautiful scenery.
I think we're going to have to strap a snowboard onto Brian Nixon. We'll be back, a short break. We'll be right back.
Hey, New Mexico. The spring and summer months are hard on your car, and that's why Power Ford makes it easy for you to take care of it. From routine maintenance to vehicle checkups, our quality service costs less than most of the places that promise to get you done quick or in a jiffy. Allow the experts at Power Ford to help you take care of your car. We'll also include a sanitation and disinfectant treatment. All makes, all models, and you never need an appointment. If you're looking for a better deal and a better experience, come see us. We're on the affordable side of Albuquerque, on Montaño, west of I-25.
Hello, this is Chaplain Jim Meyer from High Desert Hospice. I want you to know that we're praying for you and to remind you that you're not alone. In times of crisis and uncertainty, it's important to cling to that which we know, that we're cared for and deeply loved by God. David had this confidence when he wrote in Psalm 28, verse 7, "The Lord is my strength and my shield. My heart trusts in Him, and I am helped." So from our family at High Desert Hospice to yours, be encouraged.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
If you come away from this program with one thing today, listening to Dr. Brian Nixon talk about his new book, Tilt, Finding Christ in Culture, it's that, number one, you need to pick up a copy of the book because it's going to tell you a lot about all kinds of different artistic things, music, literature, painting, just
poetry,
name it, poetry.
Even mathematics.
Yeah. Well, and Brian, I want you to talk to us about the culture of New Mexico that's mentioned throughout the book.
Yeah, Jim, I'm glad you brought that up because one of the reoccurring themes, even though it's a sub theme in the book, is New Mexico culture. This book is chock full of New Mexico. I mean, even though it has a very general big picture of culture, in a very specific way, it's talking about New Mexico culture. So I talk about Billy the Kid when I go down to Rio Doso in Lincoln County. I mentioned several times the Santa Fe Institute, which is the science think tank in Santa Fe. I talk about Taos. I mean, New Mexico culture is infused in this. I do a whole thing on Buddy Holly. You know, as many New Mexicans know, he recorded, though he was from Lubbock, Texas, he drove over the state lines and recorded here in New Mexico. So all his early hits were recorded here in New Mexico. So there's Buddy Holly, there's Billy the Kid, there's George O'Keefe, there's the Santa Fe Institute, Sam Shepard, Cormac McCarthy. There's two segments on Cormac McCarthy, who's in New Mexico. He lives here in New Mexico, and he won the Pulitzer Prize for his work as well. So New Mexico is infused and embedded in this book.
Brian, how do you motivate people to get off the couch, stop binge watching? What are five things people you would recommend they experience in the culture?
Well, five things that I think generally speaking, not just New Mexico, is people get out and visit museums. Go out and see some art. And you may hate the art, but still try to learn. Take the time, investigate why you may not like it. Listen to what others have to say about it, and then tell others. There's TILT, the acronym. Mm-hmm. So I would say visual art. And then music. You already alluded to this, Jim. Get out to the Philharmonic. Get out to your local symphony. Get out to even church organizations that do choirs or handbell performances, and just experience the music, because there's beautiful things that could come from it. Then thirdly, I would say poetry. For me, poetry readings, I know they sound so boring, and there is a section on poetry reading in here as well. As a matter of fact, I use a time that Chelsea Clinton, I brought a class of kids to a poetry reading that Chelsea Clinton was in. They were more interested in Chelsea Clinton than they were the poetry. But the whole point is poetry reading is a thermometer on what is going on in the world. And you know, you could investigate who the poets are and what they do. And I kind of give you a little idea of how to do that in the book. But then the last two areas I would say people could investigate would be architecture. Go through your city and learn about the architecture. Maybe go to a different city and learn about the architecture. Take a street walk. And a lot of cities have guided tours that you could go and pick up something and learn about the famous architecture. Of course, here in New Mexico, we're unique. We have architecture that no one else has in the country, so it really makes it unique here. And then finally, I think the fifth area that people don't do enough of is formal dance, you know, ballet, something else where you could really experience a kinesthetic, a very physical, sports-like version of art and beauty. So these are five areas I would encourage people to investigate, to look into. You know, for me, the top three would, of course, be the visual arts, you know, museums, music, and poetry. But as a matter of fact, here in Albuquerque, Jim, we have a great mural tour. They have a lecture and a website dedicated to the murals of Albuquerque. And when COVID came, my wife and I, because there was nothing else to do and we were tired of watching those Netflix shows, we said, let's go out and use this website as our, you know, springboard to look at the murals of Albuquerque.
And by the way, we're always mentioning Netflix, and I want to say by word of compliment, they're doing a great job. I mean, they got so much content. It's amazing. Some of it I don't agree with,
right, sure.
But a lot of it I do. It's amazing. But that's not all you want to experience.
Right.
And that's why we live in this beautiful place. Tell us the acronym and what TILT means.
TILT, again, is take time. I is investigate. L is listen. And T is tell or teach others. So take the time to go out and experience what your community and the culture has. Investigate. You know, to learn about the artist or the musicians or what it is you're seeing or hearing. And then listen to what others have to say about it. And then go and tell others what you said or what you learned or saw or agreed or disagreed. But listen first and then lecture later, as I've mentioned a couple of times. So TILT not only is the name of the book, but it's an acronym that I end the book with. Take time, investigate, listen, and tell others about what you learned.
And you've taken the time to listen to people that have contrary opinions to you.
That's right. And I think that's part of, you know, if there's one thing with a lot of the race riots have shown us in the protests, is that we are to listen to others. And then we could lecture or talk back. But listening is an important facet of our life.
TILT, Finding Christ in Culture, is available now on Amazon and soon at Parchments of Albuquerque. Brian Nixon, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for being here.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.